Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back.
Hey, baby, hey, baby.
Welcome to Fuck Back.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G, but I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky ass shit like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few wins as I breeze through. 2 in the morning and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home. I got bitches in the living room getting it on,
and they ain't leaving till 6 in the morning.
So what you wanna do? Shit,
I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too.
So turn off the lights and close the door. But
we don't let them. Yeah. So we gon' smoke an ounce to this. G's up, hoes down while you fuzz a bounce to this.
Smoking endo,
sipping on gin and juice,
laid back,
with my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
All right. Welcome back to the show. This is In the Jar, episode 102. I actually realized yesterday that I had miscalculated the amount of episodes on the podcast. There are a couple. I do it with the thumbnail. It doesn't really matter. But we eclipsed episode 100 three episodes ago. So that's pretty cool to see. I would have celebrated it if I knew it was episode 100. But nonetheless, I went to bed last night. And I get these little widgets on my phone updating me on sports happenings, let's just say. Active games going on. Baseball games, specifically the World Series. I have a widget on my phone that is consistently updating me. And I wasn't really paying much attention to my phone. I wasn't really paying much attention to what was going on in that Game 3. And I'm obviously on the West Coast. So by about 10 p.m., 10:30 p.m., you anticipate Game 3 of the World Series to be over with. And like the little bad boy I was, I had a little toke of smoke and fell into the rabbit hole on a Joey Diaz podcast, a great comedian, Joey Coco Diaz. Loved to listen to Uncle Joey in the evening. And then I saw that Tucker Carlson had released an episode, a podder, if you will, with Nick Fuentes. And I got sucked into that for 30 minutes. And by the time I looked up, it was about 11:30 my time here in Arizona. And the World Series game was still going. And I think it went well beyond when I finally laid my head down to sleep. I think it went till about midnight. 18 innings. October magic, they call it. Now, the Dodgers end up winning 6-5. Freddie Freeman walk-off home run in the bottom of the 18th inning. It was a 6-hour, 39-minute baseball game. Tied the record. How did it tie? Tied the record for the longest World Series game ever. matching the Dodgers' own 2018 Classic versus the Red Sox. So you're telling me that that game in 2018 was also 6 hours and 39 minutes? I can't confirm that to be fact. But when you say that a game went for 6 hours and 39 minutes, and then you say it's tied for the longest World Series game ever, is that down to the minute? It has to be. 2018. I've said this on the show before. It's hard for me to get up for baseball when my Cincinnati Reds aren't playing. But when I went to bed here in Arizona at 11:30, and this game was still rocking, this game went until about 2:30 a.m. Eastern time. You got folks on the East Coast that probably woke up 2 or 3 hours after this game ended. The Dodgers stole a 2-1 series lead. It's got to be demoralizing as hell for the Blue Jays, by the way, to play your heart out. And now I think the Blue Jays and the Dodgers, the Doyers, just started playing again. So you got to play two baseball games in one night, and then you come back. How many hours is that? You come back and you got to play another game at 5 p.m. Pacific time again. I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, baseball, not a very grueling sport. Very grueling sport if you're a pitcher. Very grueling. Very hard on the arm. I got out in the backyard and tossed a baseball around a couple years ago. And let me tell you, I threw that thing. I swung that baseball probably 7 times. And I woke up and I felt my right shoulder the next morning. It is no joke. I don't know who the hell is going to be pitching in this contest, because each team last night in this 18-inning game used every single pitcher they got. Looks like Ohtani is going to be on the bump. I don't think it's any question that this guy is the greatest baseball player of all time already. I think he's the only player in the history of baseball to have 3 multiple homer games in one postseason. This guy had 8 or 9 at-bats last night, absolutely torched when they pitched to him. I think he was 4 for 4, 2 homers, at least 5 or 6 ribbies. And then they just started intentionally walking him. Let's continue to recap before we get into the nitty-gritty on the stats here. I won't talk about baseball that much on this show. I love baseball. My gramps was a pro. I'm a diehard Cincinnati Reds fan, and that's exactly why I can't really emotionally attach myself to baseball, because you guys see how the Bengals do me. Could you imagine if the Reds were doing that? And they do that to me. Can you imagine if that was twofold? The emotional distress? Emotional damage. My 8-year-olds say that shit all the time. It's crazy how the viral internet's reached this young generation of kids. Walk off in 18th. We covered that. Sheer exhaustion. That's a good way to put it. I'm using Grok to outline this show. Grok on X. I say, Grok, give me the pulse on the streets today. Help me put together a show, Grok. Any of you guys could put together a show just like what I'm doing, by the way. You grab transcripts from shows similar to what you want to talk about. You throw it in the AI chatbot machine. Throw the transcript in there, and it'll throw a nice little outline together for you. It was baseball at its most unforgiving. 37 runners left on base. 43 runs not scored. A postseason record. And both bullpens gassed after deploying 10 pitchers apiece. Ohtani, 4 for 4, 2 homers, 2 doubles, 5 BBs. He reached base 5 other times, it looks like. 4 of them were intentional. They just stopped pitching to him. 3 runs, 3 RBIs, 3 ribbies. Reached base 9 times, which is a postseason record. First with 4 extra base hits in a World Series game since 1906. It's hard to not cement this guy, Ohtani, as the greatest baseball player of all time already. Most dynamic, most useful. I think he's already got 3 MVPs. Freddie Freeman, 2 for 7. Eesh. 1 homer, which was the walk-off. 2 ribbies. First player with multiple walk-off homers in World Series history. And then Vlad Guerrero Jr., I saw him get home on a run he had where he finessed his body in such a way to avoid the tag. It was a close throw at home. I'm kind of pissed I missed this game, but like I said, it's hard for me to get bought into baseball without the Reds in it. And the Reds are never in it, so I just haven't been bought into baseball. My greatest baseball memory of all time was when Todd Frazier, number 21 then for the Cincinnati Reds, I think he was a Cincinnati kid as well, but he won the home run derby when the All-Star game was hosted in Cincinnati. That's my highlight of baseball fandom, if that tells you anything about how painful it's been being a Cincinnati sports fan. I ranted about it yesterday. We don't have to harp on it today, but we might, and we will. So, Ohtani, you know, it was basically, and I don't have much more to say on it. It was a historic fucking game. Just crazy. Freddie Freeman's greatness is obviously up there as well, at least in terms of postseason success. That's how I like to look at players in terms of their overall greatness. How did they play when the lights were brightest? And Freddie Freeman's one of those guys that seems to continually come through, seems to continually be in the mix, whether it was back when he was in Atlanta, they won the World Series with him, or in L.A. now with this super roster that literally nobody outside of Southern California wants to see. It is cool to watch greatness. It's cool to see a dominant player like Ohtani. It's also fun to hate on him. They, of course, were the team that knocked out my Reds. It was, looking back on it, absolutely inevitable. The Reds didn't even look like they belonged. And I don't think anybody other than these Blue Jays in this game last night really looked like they belong with this Dodgers team. So I literally think that Game 4 has started right now. Game 4 World Series. Don't leave the show. Let's see. Yeah, today is starting in about an hour. Perfect. So if we got baseball fans in here, you guys can hang tight, and then we'll be wrapping right when this Game 4 of the World Series commences. I can't imagine how exhausted these guys must be. And then you got to go out and play again and make sure. I wonder what the coaches told him last night, what the managers told him. Get some good sleep and then pop back here. What, you know, professional athlete. I don't know what it looks like for baseball. In football, you normally pull up to wherever the team's meeting to start the game day about 4 hours in advance. So these guys were up until about, I guarantee you all these guys, they didn't get home, get to their hotel, get settled until probably about 1 a.m. minimum, maybe even later. These guys might have not made it back to bed until like 2 a.m. And then you probably got to pull up to the ballpark around, they probably gave them a later start. They probably did something outside of the norm based on what happened last night. And said, hey, instead of pulling up at 1 p.m. California time today, pull up at like 2. So you go to bed, let's say at 2:30 a.m. after playing that game last night. And then what do? You sleep until about 11 a.m., grab a cup of Joe, maybe get a little top from your lady, and then head right back to the ballpark. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Monday Night Football happened last night. Kansas City Chiefs absolutely whooped the Washington Commanders. I didn't watch that game either, admittedly. I knew how it was going to go. I was exactly right. It was a shitey game. They traded turnovers back and forth. 28-7 the final at Arrowhead. I mean, I think everybody with a pulse knew that this is going to be a beatdown. Marcus Mariota at quarterback for the Commanders. And even when Jaden Daniels is at the helm for Washington, it just looks like this team is struggling a bit this year. They've had a couple of key moments in the season go against them. You had that rainy Monday night game against Chicago a couple weeks ago where you mishandle the snap. It looks like the Bears are dead in the water, and then they recover that fumble, end up pulling out a win against the Commanders. 3-5. They are equal with my Cincinnati Bengals in terms of record. And I thought they were going to be more respectable than this. I thought Dan Quinn had a really good thing going. I thought Jane Daniels had a really good thing going. And let's not get down on them too bad. The Chiefs is still the Chiefs. Pains me to say that. It also pains me to say this, but we got to give a dose of reality to everybody watching this show. The Chiefs-Bengals rivalry is no more. The Chiefs aren't even thinking about the guys in stripes anymore. And it's completely at the expense of the Bengals organization. Let me expand on that. The Bengals organization has done this to themselves. I read an article. I didn't mean to make this about the Bengals.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
I read an article today talking about the downfall of the Bengals organization since the Super Bowl run. And it's just really sad to read. It's a bunch of self-imposed moves, letting guys walk. And really the point of the entire article I read about the Bengals' downfall to this point was talking about the lack of leaders on defense. The common denominator with the Bengals Super Bowl team in 2021, 2022 was that they had leaders on defense. Jesse Bates at safety, DJ Reader in the D line, and they let these guys walk. Pivotal moment in the history of the franchise, at least right now. Because the defense, it just doesn't have any leaders. They don't have anybody to step up. You think Jordan Battle's going to step up and be a leader? No. The only guy on defense with a C on his chest requested a trade. Trey Hendrickson wants out. You know, we'll talk about trade deadline rumors. People are still, I think the Trey Hendrickson trade talk is finally dead. It's clear Cincinnati's going to ask for an arm and a leg to get to trade Trey away. But you got names like Quinnen Williams. You got I'll go into that here in a minute. Let's finish recapping the Monday night game. Chiefs improved at 5-3. Chiefs is still the Chiefs. Everybody's really high on them now. I think the Colts are still a better team. I think the Colts are the most dominant team in the NFL right now in a weak AFC. Mahomes, 25 for 34. I think he started off really shaky. 299 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks, both of them in the first half, 15 rushing yards. Bounced back after a shaky start with a stellar second half. Averaged 8.9 yards per play on 3 touchdown drives of 80 yards, 75 yards, and 94 yards. They marched 94 yards at one point. Kareem Hunt really taking on a big role in this Chiefs offense. 2 touchdowns, 1 on the ground, 1 through the air. Only 11 yards on 3 carries. I take that back. He must not have as big of a role as I think. Looks like Isaiah Pacheco's hurt. So who else was getting carries? Were they just throwing every play? I didn't watch the game. I didn't think it was worth watching. And I was at jiu-jitsu. Those Monday night games are always tough for me to watch because I go to jiu-jitsu. And then normally they're over by then because I'm in Arizona. Kelce had a vintage game. I think he's got now the most touchdowns in Chiefs history, 83. Six catches, 99 yards, and a touchdown. He tied. So he tied Priest Holmes. I remember old Priest Holmes, making me feel old today. 83 touchdowns, tied for the most in Chiefs history. He'll obviously break that. Rashee Rice, the hit and run man. Nine catches, 93 yards, and a TUD. 18-yard touchdown in the fourth quarter. Opens up the offense. And this is what's scary about the Chiefs. They let this guy loose, Rashee Rice. And it's a problem early in the season. Bacon soda. Thank you, Loyal, for the sub. Appreciate it, brother or sister. Where was I going? I forget. McLaurin was back for the Commanders. Looks like he had three catches for 54 yards and a TUD. Made some acrobatic plays, but aggravated a quad injury, so they might have had him back a little too early. I want to see some training staffs in the NFL get audited a little bit. It looks like these injuries might be a result, and I can't say this for a fact. Why else would we have such a surge in injuries in the NFL in one season? Again, it could be coincidence. Could be that guys are bigger, faster, stronger. But it also could be that training staffs might not get the scrutiny that they need to have in order to be the most effective they can be. Have we ever thought about that? An organization like the 49ers continue to be riddled with injuries. They've been riddled with injuries for the past 4 years, 3 years. And their training staff sends Brock Purdy out far before he's ready. Would they send him out to play like 4 weeks ago at this point, 3 weeks ago, and he still hadn't come back? He got that injury in week two. Turf toe's nothing to fuck with. This damn dog's... You better quit moving the camera, man. Hey, I'm talking to you. You better be careful about the camera. I got this dog hanging out in hell with me. So, yeah, man. I mean, I tried to pull some shit together today. It's a bit of a dead Tuesday. We're going to have a dead Wednesday tomorrow. We're going to have to pull together here, rally as one, to continue to bring you guys the best content that we possibly can. Marcus Luigi-Oda, one TUD, two picks. 213 passing yards, struggled to sustain drives. The Chiefs actually were tied with the Commanders going into the half. I remember getting an alert from the NFL app saying that this game was tied, and I looked at it, I was like, what the fuck? But then the Chiefs pulled away in the second half. First half was very sloppy for the Chiefs. 7-7 tie, five empty drives. Four combined turnovers. But Kansas City flipped a switch post-halftime. And this is what great teams do. They make adjustments at halftime. This is what great coaches do, like Andy Reid. They make adjustments at halftime, and they go out and they execute them, and they whip some ass in the second half. Torched Washington's defense in the second half. 8.9 yards per play on three straight touchdown drives. Offensive firepower. Paired with a stifling defense. Defense on the Chiefs is looking really good right now, too. Nick Bolton leading that thing, number 32 with the dreads. He's a scary mug. Looks like Predator. Looks like the defensive rendition of Derrick Henry. Chiefs are hitting that midseason form, making them a legit AFC contender. Are the Chiefs, and here's the angle. Here's the discussion. Are the Chiefs back to their Super Bowl caliber selves? And has Rashee Rice's return fueled this Chiefs team's ascendance in the last couple weeks to AFC, back to AFC contendership? Because they started 0-2. I think that like I said, great coaches find a way to make do with what they have. Obviously, you have to have the bare minimum level of personnel. And with that comes a certain degree of competency in the scouting department and player personnel so that you field a team that is at least workable for a creative, dynamic coaching staff to mold into what their vision for the team is, whatever that vision is. And I think part of Andy Reid's success in pro football comes from the fact that he's a visionary. Sound like I'm glazing, but he is a visionary guy. They come up with plays that nobody's really ever seen before. They utilize the creative nature of Mahomes' playing style to come up with new, quirky, wonky plays. I'm talking like shovel passes, motion a fucking sniffer, and then shovel pass it to him. Stuff like that we didn't really see before the Mahomes era, the Andy Reid rendition of these Kansas City Chiefs. And like I said, man, I love hating on the Chiefs. I loved, again, I'm going to make this about the Bengals. I loved in 2021, 2022, 2023, when the Chiefs and the Bengals were meeting in the AFC Championship and the fans are talking smack, the refs, all this. And the refs have been a big discussion as of late in the NFL. There's been a couple of plays I've seen. There was an incompletion fumble between the Saints and the Buccaneers that no one whistled dead. And I think, I can't remember who fumbled, and maybe it was the Bucs that ran it back for a touchdown. Nobody whistled it dead, and then they retroactively come back and say, oh, yeah, we did whistle that dead. That's a suspendable offense, in my opinion. The NFL's really got to figure out what they want to do with the refereeing situation. I think you make – I don't know why referees aren't full-time employees within the league. I don't know why – these referees are 1099 employees. I think it hurts the integrity of the game. And I think you're going to see, we're already seeing it with the NBA. I think you're going to see a lot of bad shit come out in the next couple years around sports gambling and how that's become widely legal and how that might have affected the integrity of games everywhere. I don't think that the gambling stuff is just going to affect the integrity of the game in basketball. I think it's affecting the integrity of games in every sport, and I think it's going to become a real problem. We've let the cat out of the bag. It's much like if you look at some of these changes that have been made in sports with the NIL and college sports and sports gambling becoming widely available, accepted, not taboo. Our sports landscape has changed in a seismic way and will continue to. And so who is it on to uphold the integrity of the game? We just saw a kid, number 7 for LSU. I think he was an impactful player on that team as well. Brian Kelly getting fired might have had something to do with it. But number 7 for LSU, I can't remember his name. He's a defensive player. Is just quitting on his team. He's done for the year. I guess just said, fuck it, I'm done. We got to make sure that these changes don't affect the integrity of our sports. And I don't know how we as fans or the media do that other than just talk about it and try and hold people accountable. But again, back to the refs in the NFL. You saw a tush push occur in the Eagles-Giants game this Sunday. And I just saw this for the first time today where Jalen Hurts is clearly not down. The play is clearly not over. And Kayvon Thibodeau rips the ball right out of his hands. Giants recover a fumble. And then the refs come back. And not only do they say it's not a fumble, they give the Eagles a first down on account of forward progress. Okay, what is forward progress? Let's clearly define that. I don't think there is a clear definition of what forward progress is anymore. I think the refs fall back on. And the refs reviewed that play, by the way. I'll clip this and show the video on the bottom part of the screen so that you guys can see what I'm talking about. But Kayvon Thibodeau ripped this ball out of Jalen Hurts' hands before the play was even down. Here's the thing about the tush push. I'm all for the tush push. Jalen Hurts is the best in the history of the game at doing it. The Eagles are the best in the history of the game at doing this new kind of play. And if you can't stop it, you can't stop it. But if we can't cleanly referee this play, then we have to get rid of it for the benefit of the game. It happened against the Giants a couple weeks ago. You had guards. You had basically the entire offensive line for the Eagles jumping before the start of the tush push play, and it's not whistled dead. In fact, they did it four times in a row that game when the Giants beat them on, I think, Thursday night a couple weeks ago in the Meadowlands. If you can't referee this play, it shouldn't be in the game. It's nothing against the Eagles. They do this play tremendously. The Eagles should be the biggest proponents of cleaning up the officiating around this tush push more than anybody. If you can't referee this play, you can't have it in the game. And so Kayvon Thibodeau rips the ball out of Jalen Hurts' hands. Giants recover it. They review it. And they come back and say forward progress was stopped when it clearly wasn't. So I don't know. I've never been, other than intramurals, flag football, I've never been a referee. I do know what it means to be a line judge and a field judge and all that. But I don't know what goes into refereeing at the professional level. I know these guys have other jobs when it's not football season. I know a lot of these guys have been doing it for many, many years and seen many, many changes in the game, different kinds of plays, different kinds of strategies that they've probably never seen before, like the tush push.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
But again, I'm all for the tush push. If you can't stop it and you just want to play bully ball, I love bully ball. But if you can't cleanly referee it, it doesn't have a place in the game anymore. So that's been a discussion in media today that I've seen or what's going on with these refs in the NFL. Football is an interesting game. I mean, you think about it. Umpires, referees in basketball, referees in football, they can all affect the game in a negative way if they're not doing their job the completely correct way. It's all sports. I was getting ready to say that football referees have the most impact, but no. In basketball, if a ref wants to call a foul every time the ball comes back and forth down the court, that's going to affect the game. If an umpire in baseball doesn't have eyes and he can't dictate the strike zone, he's going to affect the game. In football, it just seems like football is a lot more intricate in how the ref can affect the game. I think the ways I listed it for basketball and baseball are pretty straightforward, pretty simple, and there may be not many other ways other than maybe a you got a quick trigger on a technical foul if you're a basketball ref, or call him close plays at the base. We saw that a lot in the baseball game last night, the World Series Game 3. A lot of close calls at the bag where the ref or the umpire could either, he's out, he's safe. Dude, I used to umpire Little League Baseball when I was in high school. And I used to love just, send the boys home,
get my check.
I rung a kid up. I was so ready to go home. It was a strike. But I rung this kid up with the utmost ferocity, dude. It was the last strike of the game. And when I saw that thing hit in the middle of the strike zone, I said, hey! Took my check and went home, boy. It's like that. There's a lot of guys out there in that position, though, that would have called it, would have rung him up if, even if it was a ball. I got a little bit of integrity. You know what I mean? So back to Monday night. Commanders injury woes and offensive struggles. Without Jaden Daniels, Washington leaned on Mariota, who showed flashes but couldn't sustain drives. Only 66 yards in the second half. The run game was non-existent with 60 yards in total. And injuries to left tackle Laremy Tunsil. This will never change about my perception of Laremy Tunsil. I always think about before he got drafted, the guy out of Ole Miss, before he got drafted, that video that leaked to him smoking gas out of that, smoking pressure out of that gas mask. You guys remember that clip? Real ball knowers remember that clip. And it hurt his draft stock. I don't think a video like that, again, you know, there's a lot of things for better or for worse in society today that are becoming way less taboo than they were even 8-7 years ago. Smoking weed and betting on sports. You know, weed's legal in a lot of states now, for better or for worse. I worry sometimes about weed, that it's going to become over-commercialized, kind of like food did in the 50s and 60s, and you take something good and medicinal, like food, and you start mass-producing it, you take the soul out of it, and you stop worrying about if it's even good for people. You just want their brain to light up with dopamine when they eat your Oreos that you're making. And then you start slipping the FDA a little bit of money to make sure that you're taken care of and all this stuff. I fear that's going on with weed. And you got these really high percentage THC strains that are maybe sometimes affecting people more negatively than positively. I really think that anything that God put on this green earth is for the good of us conscious humans. I just took a discussion about Laremy Tunsil and turned it into why I feel like weed is becoming over-commercialized like food did in the 50s. Can you believe that? But it's true. Sometimes you smoke a homegrown strain and you think, where has this been all my life? This is, I feel incredible. This is great. This is healing. And then sometimes you smoke a strain from the local dispensary that, you know, maybe threw some pesticides on them plants. Maybe put some stuff in it to make it grow faster and more robust. Kind of like when you shoot up chickens with hormones and they got these big tick ties. You know, and you eat it and it's like, you can tell there's something kind of not as natural about it. Anyway, every time I see Laremy Tunsil's name, I think of that gas mask video from before he got drafted and how he spiraled in the draft after that. I don't know if that happens today. I really don't. I think it's very... Football players have always smoked weed. A lot of football players have always smoked weed. I wish as a football player that I had found weed a little sooner. I was scared shitless to smoke weed when I was playing ball, especially in college, because in college football, the NCAA can come in and test everyone in your program on a day's notice. They show up that morning, and you got to piss in a cup for these guys. And I never got tested by the NCAA, but I was always petrified, because if you pop for even a little bit of THC in your system as a collegiate athlete, and I'm not sure if this is still the case. I haven't heard anything to prove that it isn't. If you pop for even a little bit of THC in your system, you cannot darken the doorstep of the facility for 365 days. For a walk-on like I was, that's a death sentence. You're done. Your career's over. They're not. They might have you back, but chances are they won't really care to. So I was always petrified to smoke weed in college. But they would give you so many other... And this isn't... I'm not saying anything. I just realized I forgot to turn on the lights on the set. I don't think it looks bad. This isn't a testament against anybody I spent time with. I always had a great relationship with my trainers in college football. I always had a great relationship with most of the coaches. But they'll get, you know, when you get hurt, man, like let's say you have a bad injury. I don't know if you guys probably can't see that scar on my arm. God forbid you smoke weed to deal with that pain. They'll just give you some medical pharmaceutical type stuff that doesn't help you, just covers up the pain. And so when you play a violent sport like football, you gotta stretch. You gotta do stuff like, I wish I knew what I knew today as a college athlete. I really do. I wonder how my career would have been different, but doesn't do us any justice to talk about what ifs. If man, where was I going with that? I think too, it's a high strung sport. It's a violent sport, football. And I wonder if I hadn't found marijuana earlier in my playing career, that maybe I would have dropped my shoulders down a little bit. Maybe I wouldn't have been so high strung during all those practices, all those games. And maybe that would have made way to play a little bit looser, to play a little bit more relaxed. To say, yeah, I want to win, but I got faith in all the work I put in before this. I ain't gotta pin my ears back so far. You know, I can just let the results take care of themselves, let the work take care of itself. Who would have thought that Commanders left tackle Laremy Tunsil maybe spurted the most interesting segment of the show today, talking about the relationship between marijuana and football? Because that's all I think about when I see Laremy Tunsil. I think about that gas mask video of him that leaked before he got drafted. And he plummeted. He plummeted. He was a first-round talent. I think he didn't go until the late second or third. I can't remember what year that was, but it was at least 8-9 years ago, I think. So let's get to the point here on the Monday night game. Is Washington at 3-5? Are they spiraling? Or can Daniels' return salvage the season? I'm afraid that I haven't seen enough from Jaden Daniels to justify that the Commanders will even be a playoff team this year. The Eagles are obviously going to win the NFC East. And then you look at the wild card race. It'd be really interesting to break that down. I don't know if I have that at my disposal, a playoff picture breakdown. But, I got somebody in the chat saying, sports are a dying sport here in America. What do you mean by that? I do see what he's saying. I hope he's wrong. Sports gambling, is going to reveal a lot of things about society in the coming years. I used to think it was a good thing. I'm starting to be a boomer and think it's a bad thing. But the cat's out of the bag. It's just like paying collegiate players. We're never going back from that. And we're never coming back from sports gambling either. There's too many partnerships. There's too many politics. There's too much money out in the ether. So we got to figure out how to navigate it with it as a factor in today's sports world. But I do think Washington's spiraling a little bit. It'll be interesting to see how they respond. I've been right and wrong about a few things this season, mostly right, but sometimes we're wrong. I was wrong about Jake Browning, and God damn, Flacco's apparently day-to-day with the Bengals. You talk about spiraling. Flacco's apparently day-to-day with the Bengals, and they're not going to reveal who's going to start against the Bears this week for competitive purposes. And Jake Browning's starting a quarterback. I'm not watching these Bengals. You know what the outcome's going to be. And I'm debating on if I even want to watch them as they are. Let's say Flacco continues to play. I'm wondering if they're even worth my time at this point. Okay. The Chiefs have the Bills this week. That'll be really fun. I'd imagine that'd be the Sunday night game. We'll look ahead at week 9 in the NFL later in the week. Let's see. Steve Spagnuolo's unit, Spags, has allowed just 24 points over the last three games with three takeaways in that span. They neutralized Washington's early momentum, forcing two fourth down stops and a Mariota pick by Mike Dana. This isn't just an offensive team anymore. So here's the angle for this discussion. Is Kansas City's defense the key to their AFC West push? Absolutely. I think defense is the key to any team's push. Look at the Bengals. When you're a wet blanket on defense in the NFL, you don't have sustainability as a winning football program. You just don't. Look at the Bengals as a prime example of that. We focus on the flashy players on offense. And I love Ja'Marr Chase. I love T. Higgins. I love Joe Burrow. But when you allocating all that cap space to three offensive players, it's going to be really hard to put together a good defense. And then you have a numbskull scouting department. We got into all that yesterday. If you want to hear my rant about that, go to yesterday's show. So with the deadline, and we're at about 45 minutes, I might send you guys off into the sunset here in a couple minutes. Trade deadline's coming up. Names like Breece Hall for the Jets. You know, the Jets look like they're going to be sellers even with this fucking win against Cincinnati on Sunday. Do they trade Breece Hall to a contender? Aaron Glenn dismissed it as rumors earlier this month. But do the Bills – I mean, no. The Bills wouldn't go after Breece Hall. The Lions wouldn't need Breece Hall. The Ravens, maybe they could benefit from having him. But you got King Henry. Plenty of interest in this explosive back who's averaging 4.8 yards per carry but stuck on a sinking ship. Trading him could net a day two pick, but the Jets' massive ask price might ice everybody out. And that's the thing. You got two impactful players for the Jets, supposedly on the trade block as we approach the November 4th trade deadline in the NFL. Quinnen Williams on the defensive side at that three technique. And then you got Breece Hall. But here's the thing. And this is why I think maybe the NFL trade deadline, I think it'll be exciting. I don't want to make that take that the NFL trade deadline will be deader than people think. But you look at Breece Hall, the asking price for him is going to be high from the Jets. Apparently, the Jets are seeking a first rounder for Quinnen Williams. I don't think anybody's going to consent to that. But again, the shape that the Jets are in, even after this fucking win against my Bengals, might force them to sell lower than they want. I know that the Bengals are getting tons of calls about Trey Hendrickson, but again, teams calling about Trey Hendrickson, teams calling the Bengals about Trey, trying to get a good deal. It's going to be about like talking to a brick wall. And I know this front office better than a lot of people. So would it be that way with the Jets? Do the Jets not deal? I think the Jets deal at least one of those guys. I think the Jets are in a position where they're going to have to compromise on somebody as we approach this trade deadline. Breece Hall is 24, and he's got dual threat ability in the run game and a passing game, and it would make for a really dynamic addition to an offense with a contender, and I'm sure he'd be perfectly happy to go play for a team that is in the mix. We got some Saints receivers on a trade block, and I think the asking price for these guys might be more realistic. Rashid Shaheed, who's a great player, and Chris Olave, who's also a great player. Schefter said on McAfee that he'd bet the Saints move at least one receiver, with calls pouring in for Olave, elite route runner with 500 yards, more than 500 yards, and speedster Shaheed. Shaheed's one of the fastest. I think Shaheed has the record this season in the NFL for fastest miles per hour during a live play. I think that likelihood that the Saints trade a receiver is about 8 out of 10. Again, the Saints, they benched Spencer Rattler this week in favor of rookie quarterback out of Louisville, Tyler Shough. So we'll see how this plays out. It looks like the Saints are going to be tanking. We covered Quinnen Williams. Jacoby Myers, a receiver for the Raiders, requested a trade a while ago. I think he said this team is ass to the press early in the year. But the Raiders are asking a high price. Again, this is a common trend we're seeing with the NFL trade deadline approaching. Teams are tanking teams that are in seller positions are asking a lot for these players, which is stalling out deals. And that looks to be the case with Raiders receiver Jacoby Myers. He requested a trade in camp, actually, and he reiterated recently. The request is public, but again, and I think this is what's going to stall a lot of deals. People are really rumbling about potential deals before the NFL trade deadline. I think these teams, even in dire positions like the Raiders, like the Jets, dare I say the Bengals, are still asking for a lot for these players, which is going to stall a lot of deals. I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to have a lot of shit to talk about on the show once we get closer to the trade deadline. But I'm thinking that it's not going to be as crazy as some of us might think, because teams in seller positions are going to stall deals by asking for crazy prices. Like, I don't think the Bengals are going to give up anything less than a first rounder for Trey. And I'd be pissed even if they did that, because I know Duke Tobin's going to blow that draft pick. He's going to blow it into smithereens and basically render the trade worthless on the Bengals' behalf. But again, I'm seeing reports that the Colts are targeting guys like Trey. There were rumors that the Jags were going to trade their receiver out of LSU. I think he's in his second year in the league, Brian Thomas Jr. Liam Cohen said there's no plans to trade him. We're going to maybe see some stuff that we don't expect with the trade deadline. I think a lot of the names we're dropping probably won't move. I think the most likely move that's made in the people that we've chatted about on today's show would be one of those Saints receivers. I think that's very likely that the Saints move a receiver. Giants defensive end Kayvon Thibodeau. There are Bengals fans on Twitter chirping today about the possibility of the Bengals going out and getting Kayvon Thibodeau. Don't see it happening. Not with this organization. Apparently, the Giants told teams that they're not interested in trading him. So those rumors are kind of getting squashed. And then Eagles are eyeing corners amid A.J. Brown drama. Cryptic post fuel trade talk by A.J. Brown, but focus is adding corners like Broncos' Jaquan McMillan. There's no panic for the Eagles, obviously. Titans as sellers. Vikings looking for a quarterback. Overall, I think we can expect maybe 10 deals coming up on this trade deadline. It looks like the most likely folks to trade guys, at least in big trades, would be The Jets with Breece Hall and Quinnen Williams. Breece Hall, his price is pretty high coming off that performance against Cincinnati. And, of course, Quinnen Williams is a premier run stopper. I'd love to see him in Cincinnati. But I fear that after losing to the Jets on Sunday, that the Bengals will no longer be buyers. I hope I'm wrong. I don't think they're in a position to be buyers right now. Got some shit to figure out. I would be excited if the Bengals signed a defensive playmaker, but this is a team game. It's really, really ignorant, in my opinion, to think that one defensive player, even if it's a star player like Kayvon Thibodeau, I think it's ignorant for me to say that the Bengals signing one guy would fix the whole defense. Might cover up a few cuts, you know, but it's not going to heal them. Okay. I think that's where we're going to wrap it today, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, if you're just popping in, I appreciate you watching. And I imagine the algorithm wouldn't have brought you here if you didn't like football. And if you like football, you're going to love our channel, even when the studio lights are off. You're going to love our channel. And so if I could take an inch from you watching and turn it into a yard or even a mile, I'm only going to ask you for one thing. And that's to subscribe to the channel. It helps us out. Eventually, we want to make money off of this thing, start paying guys to put the production together, to put the thumbnails together, to put the set together so that I can come with the best juice every single day. Every single sub counts, and I appreciate anybody that chooses to do that. It's the only thing I'm ever going to ask you to do on this show. We also got replays of the show on this very channel. All the more reasons to subscribe. Even more reasons to subscribe. We do some Madden streams. We do some daily clips so that you don't have to watch the whole thing if you don't want to. And we also offer this podcast on all audio platforms, all of them, big or small. You can find it on any audio platform you get your podcast, and that's updated daily. So if you're a Spotify guy, you want to make your girl listen to this show in the car, learn a little bit about what's going on in the football world, college and pro, I advise you to head over to Spotify. But obviously, if you're watching this video rendition of the live show, the main prerogative is for you to subscribe on YouTube. But if you want to go to Spotify, leave us a 5-star review. That is tremendous to me as well. And that's the end of my show promo there. It's been a good day on In the Jar. And we'll be back tomorrow to cover whatever develops between now and 6-ish Eastern tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, hope you guys have an incredible night. Go watch the World Series game. That's starting in 9 minutes. And until then...